Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make The Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian here to talk about some recruiting. Let's start with Oregon State, Nemec. How big is this Wednesday signing period for them?
It's huge for them. They are looking at four or five possible new commits. The key targets are Craig Evans. He's the number four defensive tackle in the country. He's down to Kentucky and Oregon State. Oregon State right now has the inside track for him. It's an area of need. It'd be big. The other one, the other key need, is an offensive tackle. And George Moore is 6'7", 305 pounds, committed to Washington State. In name only. It's Washington State, Oregon State, and Cal. Again, I think the Beavers are in a really good spot. Those are the two big names to watch. They've got a number of commits, including Jake Luton, one of the top five JC quarterbacks in the country, who are already committed and expected to sign. They're looking at potentially as many as seven or eight signees, and they'd all be three stars or higher.
So for Oregon State, give us the difference between the February deadline and what's happening tomorrow.
Sure. What's happening tomorrow is the JC guys can sign early. They can get on campus early and be involved in spring ball. The high school guys that can sign tomorrow are signing a non-binding financial aid agreement. And the only high school guys who are able to sign are kids who plan to enroll at Oregon State or their respective university early. So it's not available to kids who plan on getting there in the summer. It's only available to kids who plan on getting there during this school year. So Oregon State expects to sign four-star wide receiver Isaiah Hodgins and Taylor, the receiver from Chandler, Colby Taylor, who had offers from Notre Dame, Arizona State, Wisconsin, and others, two big-time talents who expect to be on campus early, but obviously, those are non-binding, so there's still potential until they arrive on campus that they could sign potentially with two or three different schools. Kids have done that before, but they're locked in. They're going to Oregon State.
The Oregon State has the immediate needs, and Gary Anderson recognizes he's going to have to do things a little differently. He also, he's a community college guy himself, so I don't think there's a stigma for him bringing in JC players. How many guys could he bring in before people start to go, hey, man, what are you doing here? This is getting a little out of hand.
I think if he gets to the point where 75% of his class is JC guys, there's reason to be concerned. He's still got to get guys he can build up and will be there for 4 years and show progress and growth over 4 years. But it wouldn't shock me if this class is half junior college players, and I have no real problem with it. He's vetting them well. He's getting quality talent. And the big thing here is you look at the JC guys he's bringing in. They have 4, 5, 6, 7 Power 5 conference offers. He's competing with the SEC, the big Pac-12 schools, the big 12 schools for these JC guys. You look on the flip side right now in terms of high school recruits who don't prioritize immediate playing time quite as much, and he's fighting with some lower-level Power 5 conference teams. So the JC guys he's getting are really high quality, and a number of them, 4, 5, 6 of them, could and probably should start next fall.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian talking recruiting. On the Oregon front tomorrow, is Willie Taggart in play for community college kids yet?
Not hugely. Right now he's focused on the high school guys, to be completely honest with you.
So is there, and I know we talked yesterday to Darian McNeil out of Florida. He talked about, you know, a number of Florida kids that could be coming to Oregon. Is that a pipeline that you think is sustainable, wide open, and viable for Taggart right away?
I think it depends on how we define pipeline. If you're talking about getting 2, 3, 4 guys a year from Florida, yes, Willie Taggart has that kind of charisma and that kind of pull out of the Sunshine State. If we're talking about the majority of his kids coming from Florida, I think that's a pipe dream. I think Florida State, Miami are going to do a very good job of locking that down. That said, if he can lock down California, do a better job of California, improve what the previous staff had done at Oregon and in Hawaii, and all he's doing is bringing in a couple more Florida kids, it could lead to a bump in their recruiting. You look at a guy like Bruce Judson, a four-star athlete, offers from Florida, Florida State, Clemson. He was committed to South Florida, South Florida's top commit. He says he's coming to visit Oregon, and he may flip. He's a 5'9", 190-pound slot receiver and is just absolutely electric in the open field, you start putting Judson and McNeil together on a field, and it starts to get scary pretty quickly.
You talk about the Taggart approach. What are you seeing and hearing from recruits that's different from when Mark Helfrich was the coach?
Well, I think Mark Helfrich and his staff made two critical errors. They overvalued what an Oregon offer meant to most kids. They felt like a number of times, and I heard this from more than a dozen recruits, that Oregon would offer and then act like kind of that was the golden ticket. And it was like, hey, you know, you're going to come here because we offered. It's like, no, you still have to recruit me. And the other piece there is that Oregon, frankly, just didn't get new age with it. They didn't build hype and excitement on social media. And whether or not people think that's exciting, whether or not adults think it's cool, kids love it. And Oregon used to be that school that was cool, that had the Times Square billboards and the cool jerseys, and they were cutting edge. They stopped being cutting edge. They fell behind Alabama, Ohio State, Washington. Heck, Oregon State has a better social media recruiting following than Oregon right now. And I think Willie Taggart's going to tap into that. We saw when he went and visited Tua Tagovailoa, he tweeted, aloha. And everybody knew exactly. Hey, he just confirmed it. He's in Hawaii. And you saw that story just absolutely take off. And that was something Helfrich was never really able to capture.
I love that you have to have the pronunciations on all the Hawaiian names. Is that part of the job?
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of the job, and it's not the fun part of the job. Sometimes they have to ask, and they have to say it really slowly four times, and I feel like an idiot. But I do the best I can, and I'm sure there's a kid like him. He doesn't do that great. He's got my name wrong. But for the most part, I try to get him right, and I have him pretty locked in.
When you look at the needs at Oregon right away, I start with defense, and I love that Darian McNeil, he came on yesterday. He's exciting. He's excited to have the Oregon commitment, but they need linebackers. They need defensive tackles. Are you seeing that kind of movement from them?
Well, they're certainly offering a number of them, and that's one of the things I like to see from Willie Taggart. Oregon kind of, under Helfrich, didn't offer blanket offer. They were very selective. And I think Taggart's approach is going to be to offer a number of guys, feel out the interest once that offer comes in, and then narrow the search with guys who say, wow, this Oregon offer is pretty exciting. Again, I thought Helfrich was really selective, and they offered once they felt comfortable, but then they didn't always have a good backup plan in place. The area I see Oregon upgrading quickly, rather than the front seven, and I know that's not exactly what Oregon fans want to hear, is the secondary. They're in the mix for four-star corner Thomas Graham. They've got a commit from Jalen Redd, who's the number four athlete in the country. D'Amador Lenore, the number three athlete in the country, decommitted, but has re-expressed significant interest in Oregon. And they do already have U.S. Army All-American defensive tackle Rutger Rettmeyer in the fold. I just finished talking to him right before you called, and he confirmed that he will be signing early with Oregon, plans to get on campus early. There was thought that he was looking elsewhere. He has offers from Ohio State and Michigan, but the U.S. Army All-American defensive tackle from Tennessee is locked in to going to Oregon.
Andrew Nemec of The Oregonian with us. I think part of Oregon's mistake, too, becomes they start thinking that they can recruit with Alabama, Ohio State, SEC, the top programs, Michigan, the top programs in the country. They got away from the bread-and-butter kid like Ryan Nall, who could just play football and was tough. Is that something Willie Taggart, does he make the same mistake that Oregon makes?
No, I think you're right, and I think Darian McNeil, and you did a great job of actually highlighting this, talking about we need dogs. We need guys who aren't afraid to hit, and that's kind of the message that Taggart's had, that McNeil has had, that we need dogs thing. And I think Oregon needs dogs. They need guys who aren't afraid to thump somebody. They need guys who are going to hit the hole, and yeah, maybe a guard pulls and gets into that hole, but they're going to blow that guard up and let everybody else clean up. Oregon had too many players in the front seven that wanted to get around blocks instead of blowing them up. And I think Willie Taggart, you look at these offers that he's had, and you look at the highlight videos of some of these guys, and they're guys that run through people, not around them. And I think that's a huge key for Oregon going forward, particularly in the front seven. They need guys who don't want to get around blocks. They want to blow them up.
The Oregon State signing day tomorrow, how much will we be able to tell about the talent level for next season based on what happens for Oregon State tomorrow? I mean, is tomorrow like a pivot point for them, or is it just an indicator?
It's important. It's an indicator. I mean, Oregon State invited me down. I'll be there starting at 6:30 in the morning to get a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on. They certainly feel like it's important, particularly up front. They've got Justin Saddlemeyer already in the fold, a 6'7", 300-pound offensive tackle. If they get George Moore, they bookend their O-line now with 6'7", 300-pound guys. Again, I don't know that that immediately turns your program around, but it sure looks different on the roster and getting off the bus. And I think what Gary Anderson wants to do is inject some size and some physicality into his team. And I think you're going to see that tomorrow. I think you're going to see them add 5 or 6 guys who stick to the message he's been delivering for the last year or two, but bolster that roster. So, no, I don't think tomorrow is a turning point in the program, but I absolutely feel Oregon State fans are going to go through the day, and if they get George Moore, if they get Craig Evans, they're going to feel a lot better because they might add 3 or 4 300-pound guys to their offensive and defensive lines, and they're adding 6'6", 220-pound quarterback Jake Luton, who's a pro-style quarterback, very different from what Gary's recruited in the past. Some are wondering, and he hasn't talked about it quite yet, some are wondering if maybe they shift gears a little bit offensively to a more pro-style look with Jake Luton. Again, not a scrambler. He's a pocket passer.
I'm looking at highlight tape right now of Isaiah Hodgins. How does Oregon State hold on to a receiver that goes 6'4 and can play this way while Nebraska and Oregon or others are running at him? What is it that Oregon State is selling this kid that he wants to be a Beaver?
There's a lot to be said for having a kid on the top of your board and telling him that from the beginning and staying with that approach. Oregon made a mistake. They waited on Isaiah a long time, and he expressed that he really wanted an Oregon offer. He released his top five. He put Oregon in his top five, and he didn't even have an offer yet. Oregon finally offered after he was committed to Washington State. He decommitted as soon as he got the Oregon offer, and then Oregon backed off and felt like they had other guys on their board they liked better. Meanwhile, Oregon State is still delivering the message, we want you. You are our guy. We will turn you into a star like Brandon Cooks, like the Rogers brothers, like so many other great athletes in their offense in the past. And Oregon kind of, you know, slow played him, and then they hit the gas again, and it was too late. Oregon State's consistent message with kids is they go after kids, they're honest with them. If they say you're third on our board, they tell them you're third on the board. But Isaiah was number one with a bullet, and they went after him, and they went and got him. Credit to Oregon State. Consistent messages work a lot to kids.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian. You can read him on Oregon Live and check him out tomorrow as he's behind the scenes. Now, behind the scenes, you're just going to be hanging out live tweeting that, or what are you going to be doing, video?
We'll have to be a little bit careful due to NCAA compliance rules. You know, there's a lot that goes on that just you can't report on yet until the guys are all signed, sealed, and delivered. So I'll be doing my very best to toe the line and just kind of write about what it's like on a signing day for a coaching staff trying to secure pledges that they need, whether that's phone calls or waiting on a fax machine. I'll be there reporting what's going on.
All right. I appreciate your time, Nemec. Good job.
Thanks.